Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I mean, I would say Top Gun is about as indicative of what our lives used to be in the military, so let's just keep it going with Wolf on Wall Street.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Kodiak Shack podcast. Today, we have an episode, and it's built for all of our military members. And those military members that are looking to maybe do something after their military time, whether that's 23 years in the military, 11 years in the military, 4 years in the military. So today we got a lot of people. But before we get to them, what we're going to say is thank you to all our listeners. And we appreciate all the support you've provided us. Remember, please give us 5 stars and rate the podcast on whatever you listen to. There's probably more admin, but I don't remember. So we'll get right into it. Today we have Kevin Shaka Klon. See, I knew it. I told you. I built the wrong mental model, and now we're screwed. So we got Kevin Shaka Klon. We've got Mike Paco Benitez, which he's been on the podcast multiple times, and then Eric Bash Straub. So now all three of these guys have done many years in the military, have moved on to other things, and we're going to see how they did it. So we can all try to follow in their footsteps if it's something you want to do alongside the airlines or instead of the airlines. So, Paco, I'm going to send it to you first. Go ahead and tell us about yourself. As you know, it's not a trap.
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet, and then we can dig into the details later. Retired military after 25 years of service, and that's split between 8 in the Marine Corps and then 17 in the Air Force. Strike Eagle backseater. Done a bunch of different assignments, and then we'll get into kind of how that shaped where I'm sitting today.
Nice. Shaka, send it.
Yeah. Hey, Vader, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the discussion. So a career F-18 Super Hornet pilot. So the last couple years in the Navy, I spent at the Pentagon doing requirements for both Super Hornet and then Navy and JAD, and then just recently retired and started working at a company called Anduril Defense Technology Company that I'm really excited to be at there. So looking forward to the conversation today.
Nice. I have multiple questions about Super Hornet stuff because I'm in the F-15C TX currently. So I've heard some stories. Bash, go ahead and tell us about yourself.
Yeah. Hey guys, thanks for having me. Air Force Academy guy, wanted to be a pilot my whole life. Did Strike Eagles where I met Paco. Was one of his young whippersnappers that he taught along the way. So glad I got to meet him there. Went to, in England rather. And then after that, went back to the schoolhouse, taught in the B course for 2 full assignments. So got a pretty unique opportunity, kind of how to shape your career after the military starts, really while you're in. So enjoyed that opportunity teaching at the B course and knew that it wasn't something that I wanted to do kind of post-retirement, and went to Duke, figured life out, and wanted to be a banker. So I live in Manhattan now, hence the apartment here in the background in my bedroom. But no, loving it. Work at Bank of America doing technology, media, and telecom banking.
So Bash is in Manhattan doing Wolf of Wall Street type stuff, which I think you guys get a bad rap because I was thinking earlier, I was like, you know, what movie can I reference that's like a good representation of like stock market guys? And I was like, Boiler Room, awesome movie, but probably not a great representation. Wolf of Wall Street, Big Short. Like there's so many movies about it, but so many times they kind of bash on Wall Street guys. Bash, is there a, oh, no pun intended, the
movie?
No, that's, I'm not that good. Yeah, the but it, what movie would you say best represents the life in the community there?
Exactly the same, right? I mean, I would say Top Gun is about as indicative of what our lives used to be in the military. So let's just keep it going with Wolf on Wall Street.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Or just are you more like Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street or Michael Douglas in Wall Street, like Gordon Gekko? Are you, which one are you?
I'll leave that up to your imagination. No, no, life is good. Let's go Leo. Everyone wants to be Leo, right? Guy's a phenomenal actor.
Yeah. Did Leo end up, did he and that character end up going to jail for, in that movie? Cause I know Gordon Gekko's character, you know, he did, but so hopefully the guy who didn't go to jail, that's probably the best.
I can tell you that I'm not going to be going to jail. So that's good.
Yeah. That's my goal. Well, that's what I want. I want like the like success story that like ends in a success, not like high highs and low lows. But either way, we've devolved rather rapidly. This podcast is obviously about talking about how you guys got to where you are, but it's always a fighter-based podcast. So fighter stories are always open. Shaka, let's talk about how, so you're a Navy pilot, which I've heard that the stick and throttles are almost identical between the F-15 and the Hornet. But the HOTAS is like worlds different. Is that accurate?
I think it is. I have one flight in the back of an F-15D, but it was like 20 years ago. But I think you're right. I don't think I appreciated at the time how similar that they actually were. But you're right. You know, a lot of the HOTAS, as far as how the Navy and the Air Force, just even though we're all bored out of the kind of the same air-to-air communities and legacy and technology, a lot of stuff just has always been, you know, upside down to me as far as how you guys think about target aspect and things are displayed and various HOTAS and hooking versus tucking and all these things. So yes, those two aircraft are built essentially in the same factory, but they have some similarities, but definitely some differences.
Well, I, you know, selfishly, I'm going through the TX, so I'm like, I appreciate that the F-16 HOTAS, which if, for everybody who doesn't know, hands-on throttle and stick, I believe is what HOTAS, the abbreviation is, but it's so different. I mean, it could not be any more different. So there's very little negative transfer, which I talked to some Navy guys who are now flying, or Hornet guys who are now flying the C model, and they're like, literally, the buttons are the same. They just do different things. And I was like, that'd be a nightmare.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Bash, you taught in the FTU. There used to be a thing when I used to teach there many years ago. I lost the penguin about, hey, here's how many functions that your HOTAS does. Yeah, it was like, it's something like, you know, 69 different functions of switches on your hands and throttle and stick, just for perspective. It's something crazy like that.
Yeah.
When you do like the shift HOTAS, control HOTAS, and up, down, left, right, long press, short press, double click.
Speak the language.
All that stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's
takes a long time to learn, but then your hands just.
Well, and some of it, maybe you guys, Bash, when you were an instructor, do you ever get to the point where you knew how to do it? Your hands would just make it happen. And then a student would say, how do you do that? And you're like, I don't actively know. Like, I know, but I can't physically tell you what button to push exactly.
The crazy thing for me is I broke my foot pretty bad, and I was only out of the jet for like 6 months or something like that. And I was kind of worried about it. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, like, am I going to be good? Like, it's been so long. And I remember strapping in for the first time, giving the crew chief the signal, and then my hands just started moving, and it was just muscle memory. And I was like, this is weird. My hands are moving. Like, where are they going? So it's totally muscle memory over time, I guess.
Yeah, it's it's amazing just how quickly you can just get right back into it. I did one of those kind of VR simulator trainers at AFRL in Kirtland, and it was just like this. I mean, total. It was like you're flying a C model with the A10 stick and throttle, but you're flying some random pod. And the HOTAS is just like some random HOTAS that the computer guys made up. But after like 2 days, it was like, okay, like I get it. And now you would just operate normally. Cause again, your brain is just like sequences. Your brain has become like a macro and you just like do things, you know? So,
totally.
So Paco, oh yeah. So Paco, we'll get into, in your military time, you did an entire career of 25 years between the two. Did you have any opportunities or did you kind of plan like, hey, this is what I want to do on active duty to help prepare me for the afterlife? Or was that more just happened to work out, and what best prepared you for it?
Oh, I'll say I don't think I did anything in the military for more than 3 years at a time. So every 3 years, you know, whether you like it or not, you get orders to go somewhere else. And so you move somewhere else. And then that job has all different types of, you know, sometimes, you know, obviously the people are different. The mission could be different. You could be pushing papers instead of, you know, being in an airplane. There's just a lot to deal with. And I think collectively over time, as you gain those, you know, you put those clues in your clue bag. And at the end of that, you're like, hey, I've got a lot of stuff that I learned along the way. Like, what can I do with it? And so every one of those kind of gives you different perspectives and kind of stretches you in a different way professionally and personally. So I really appreciated that. And that kind of set me up. And at the end of the day, I kind of looked around and I was like, well, I could stay, but I looked at the finances and stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, do I really want to be a colonel? What does the next 4 years of that look like? Newsflash, all 4 years are terrible. And the tax on the family and financially, and then in the time, and you look at your earning power. So getting out of the military after 20, I came in when I was 18 out of high school, so I didn't even go to college. But when getting out in your early 40s versus your late 40s is a dramatically different earning power over your lifetime out in the real world. And so you started looking at those and like, man, I've kind of been pushing my family around for long enough, like my entire adult life. Like, let's put the ball in their court and give them some freedom of choice. So that kind of set me up of like, well, what do I want to do? And I'll tell you that when I got out, kind of spoiler alert, I never filled out a job application. And I never like went and sought employment. Like all of those things came to me. Okay. Which is kind of remarkable. I announced that I was retiring, and the first day I had four inquiries like, hey, we really want to talk to you. And I tell you that story because if you back that train up like that, that's not just magic, right? That is putting in the work and thinking through like who you are, what is the value proposition of you out in the world, and what do you want to do, and how do you align those things? And I remember one of the best stories I ever heard that kind of really put like the tweet level summary. Well, it's not a tweet level summary, but there's a friend of ours, I won't tell you who it is, from Bash, and I know very well, and he was kind of doing the same thing, getting out. He had a stellar career as a fighter pilot. He went to his first like banking social for like, you know, private equity and kind of investment banking. And you know, they go around the room and they get to him, and you know, kind of it's like, oh yeah, here's who I am, here's what I do, here's where I live. And he's like, oh my God. And so instantly he became the most interesting man in the room, right? And so everyone wanted to hear what he had to say, a great storyteller, and everyone's just having a great time. They buy him drinks at the bar, and he's like, this is going great. Well, then after about an hour and a half, it gets to, okay, let's talk business. Like, what is your value proposition? How can you add value to my company? And, you know, the train went off the tracks. So complete failure. So, you know, you can only get so far on, hey, I was a fighter pilot, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, like what value can you provide to whatever you want to do? So find something that, you know, you enjoy. go learn the tools of that industry that Bash went and did, and then, you know, put that together, that same work ethic and those principles that you, you know, you did flying a jet. Just, you know, you're changing the mission or use case, you're changing some of the tools, you change the lingo, and then, but really the work ethic and how you approach it is exactly the same.
And what would you say? So I'm going to throw down some of your background experiences. Correct me if I'm wrong. So obviously weapons school, you were a fellow in DC, you worked in the test world, and you were obviously an instructor, like obviously going to weapons school. So out of all of those experiences, what would you say had the most transferability in to now what you're doing? And then what best prepared you for a non-military career?
I'd say none of them and all of them. No single assignment really prepares you for all that. I think it's...
Yeah.
You think you're prepared and you go, oh, I didn't know that. You know, I'm just like the people... you know, God love them, we need them. Like guys in the guard who, and Vader, you know, like they've been flying the same jet at the same place for 15, 20, 25 years. And they have opinions, obviously they have a lot of experience. They have sometimes strongly held opinions, but sometimes they lack perspective of like, well, actually, like here's the bigger picture and here's how the other things that are going on you don't know because you kind of been on an island of information. And so being able to bounce around, like I said, I was in the Marine Corps before I was in the Air Force, and just in my Air Force time, you know, I was in Ops, I was in the FTU, the training unit. Then I went to DC against my will, which actually turned out to be fascinating, and I got actually assigned to Congress, so I worked for Congress for a while, and then I worked in the Pentagon for a while, and then I came to test for a while. And I did some other stuff in between that. I did some time at DARPA, some time at Silicon Valley. And so collectively, like all of those things kind of inform, you know, professionally, like who I am and how I view the world. So I'll say the Congress one was probably the most, the biggest curveball, because I wasn't supposed to go anywhere. And like, hey, I got a call saying, congratulations, we'll see you on the Hill next year. I'm like, what Hill? What are you talking about? And then they told me like, oh yeah, you're going to be a legislative fellow. You're going to go work for a senator. I'm like, what? And at the time, and there was the running joke, I'm like, I have no idea. And when I say I have no idea, I have like purposely like blanked that part out of the world of my life. I'm like, that's like, you know, kids throwing crap at each other. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. Like, I'm just going to ignore it. So I had like purposely, even I know civics and how it all works, but I could not tell you when I got my assignment, I could not tell you what left or right meant. Or red versus blue. I'm like, I literally have no idea what you're talking about. That's how zero I was starting from. It's not like I had, I love politics and I ended up on the Hill. I literally knew nothing. I'm like, great. So I went from zero to you know, I guess a decent job during my year there and got some good stuff done. Learned a ton, met a lot of great people. But yeah, just those things, like you just having an open mind, and it's that process. Just like when you learn to fly the jet, you start from zero and then you learn how to fly an airplane and then you go to a more complicated airplane and you keep picking up experiences in that process of rapidly onboarding information, digesting it, and being able to utilize it. Just having repeated that process so many different times in my career, that's really, I think, where the magic is. It's the sets and reps. It's not any one thing.
When I think spot on, because I've said it a few times on the podcast, I think we've probably talked about it, is that broad perspective is what gives people a better understanding of things they know and then things they learn in the future. And I wouldn't give up the experiences I've had and the perspective I've gained through those. So I dig it. So Shaka, we're going to shift to you. So obviously you were in the, you did your entire time in the Navy, but then you said you got to do... Were you working in test? Where were you working again before you got out?
So my most recent job is coming out of the Pentagon, just doing requirements and budgeting for like Navy programs. So F-18 and then Navy NGAD.
That's with a soft G, by the way.
It is. We pronounce it with a soft G. It's not next generation air dominance. It's next. The Air Force will say NGAD for their kind of next gen family systems, and we say NGAD.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm learning that also between different aircraft, we have to say different words, because I can't say bug out. I have to say separate. You know, it makes sense because it doesn't make sense. So with NGAD, that's right. So working in the Pentagon, I assume you gained, just like Paco was saying, some perspective that now helps you in your current job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll land there, but you know, I first want to echo, you know, I think very similar thoughts to what Paco said, kind of looking at your career as a whole. And if I take a step back prior to that, you know, I don't, you know, my current job, I think the experiences I had the last couple of years working in the Pentagon probably most directly have me suited to perform, you know, and to add value, to kind of talk, you know, to reference Paco's story about, hey, how do you translate, you know, who you are and what, you know, how you can add value. You know, most recently that job definitely prepared me to be where I am now. But if I look back at the career, you know, even taking a step further back, you know, I always ask myself along the way, and an early mentor told me, you know, kind of the reasons to stay in the Navy were always for me like, hey, do I still love what I'm doing? Does it still work for my family? And is there something on the outside that is really calling me? And as long as those answers, you know, for most of my career, for 20 years, like those answers were all kind of a pretty resounding, like, yeah, hey, I still love what I'm doing. You know, it still works for my family, and there's nothing really outside the Navy that's calling me. But, you know, someone else early on said, you know, at the end of the day, we're all going to hang up the flight suit at some point, you know, and you'd rather have it be at a time and a place of your choosing, and to kind of be prepared to go do something else that you can be equally as passionate about, or at least maybe passionate about in different ways. So, you know, even though I think, you know, it's important along your career. So I was a JO in Japan, and then I was a weapons school instructor, and kind of at each of those phases, you know, getting to learn new skill sets, kind of like Paco said, you know, every couple of years, the military is pretty good. At first, I didn't get it. It bothered me that they wouldn't just leave you in place and just let you get really good at one thing. Like, no, they're going to make you, you know, move jobs or do something else. But you create a pretty well-rounded person and leader who can think about how to tackle problems, and who can think about, you know, how to deal with people, and you know, how to lead up, lead down, lead sideways, you know, that kind of 360 leadership mindset. So, you know, that's kind of cultivated throughout your career. So I think we probably share that. The things that really stuck out in my career, I think, that prepared me most directly for what, you know, what I think, where I think I'm going to add value at Anduril. You know, several years ago, I had the opportunity to get an EMBA, and that was kind of a, you know, at some point the Navy or the Air Force is going to force you to get some kind of an education. So I think that's maybe the first opportunity to be somewhat targeted with, hey, what are the things I'm interested in, and education. And I imagine, you know, Eric will probably have some similar things to say about this, like being targeted with those educational opportunities to not only benefit you in your current job, but then to hopefully benefit you when you transition. So that was, you know, a decade or so ago, but getting that degree, I think, gave me, you know, a financial competence, and it was a defense focused EMBA. So a pretty decent, you know, deep understanding of the defense acquisition process and all the things that we love and hate about it, probably more hate than love about it. You know, but there was that, you know, your joint tour. I was an instructor at the Joint Targeting School, which was a great opportunity during a joint tour to kind of pursue, you know, a career broadening experience. I don't think it directly relates to, you know, what I'm doing today, but it definitely gave me a lot of experiences that I've been able to leverage. Just prior to coming to the Pentagon, and then I'll end kind of with the experiences in the building. You know, when I came out of command of an F-18 squadron, you know, I still didn't, like, it wasn't, the road for me to get out was not clearly paved to go work in Anduril, to go work. And, you know, like, I still was, hey, I'm still loving what I'm doing. You know, kind of the answers to all those questions weren't really any different, but I knew I wanted to pursue another kind of educational opportunity. So, I didn't get thrown on the hill like Paco did, but I got to go be a fellow at a defense policy think tank. I was at CSBA for a year, and that kind of, it was a bit of a choose your own adventure. And it just opened my eyes to, you know, people that are just, you know, there are other organizations and there are other groups of people where there's incredibly talented, purpose-driven, motivated individuals that you can work around and be a part of. And Paco, I know we talked about this when I was transitioning, you know, about it's cool working at a place where it's almost like being at a weapons school where everyone's passionate about a mission. And you know, that kind of resonated with me. And so at CSBA, like at a defense policy think tank, but it was small. There was an element of that. That was actually really cool. It was actually kind of weird going back into the Pentagon where it's like, I got taken back out of this very kind of mission, you know, focused thing to a heavily bureaucratic, kind of slow, you know, all the things that frustrate us about the Pentagon. But, you know, where I worked was great. I loved getting to work on hard things and, you know, doing the requirements, you know, like I just got deep in, I mean, the reality of what is our defense bureaucracy, and you know, the way that we acquire weapon systems, you know. So that, you know, and even when I landed there, I don't think I knew that, hey, the road is going to a place like Anduril. It's maybe, you know, it's trying to bridge this, you know, defense technology. How can we deliver, you know, great technology to our warfighters on a pace that is going to outpace what our traditional, you know, primes might be able to do? And SHIELD, where, you know, where PACA works, is, you know, I think getting after a lot of similar things. So, all that to say is that, you know, it was throughout my career, all of that general learning, but then some pretty specific both educational and positional things.
Working with the military means there are some minimum cybersecurity requirements that are in every contract. Complying with these requirements can be painfully slow and really take your company's focus off your military customers and end users. Thankfully, the team at Adamus has simplified the process exclusively for small businesses working with the military. It should be expected that security requirements are going to be a part of working with the military, but they don't have to be difficult. Learn why prior guests on the podcast like Arun from OpsLab or Brian from ResCon use Adamus to comply with the NIST 800-171, DFARS 7012, and CMMC cybersecurity requirements in their contracts. Check out their website at www.adamuscyber.com and tell them you heard about them from the Kodiak Shack podcast. Their website will be in the show notes. We appreciate all the companies that want to work with the military, and we understand working with the government isn't always the easiest thing, but we appreciate companies like Adamus that make it just a little bit easier. Well, awesome. And I think that's, when I got in to the military, I kind of envisioned one thing, you know, flying planes. But there's so many aspects to the military that you get opportunities to do things that were not as apparent when you're 22 years old, you know, looking to light your hair on fire. So Bash, now, did you know you wanted to go to Duke when you were kind of getting into the military? Or was that kind of one of the things that happened ladder in your career and you're like, hey, I need to transition out? And then how'd you kind of set yourself up for where you are today?
Yeah, I think definitely not. I joined just to fly airplanes. There's no like hiding that. There's no, oh, I wanted to serve my country. It was just blatantly, I was a kid, wanted to fly fighter jets. So I got the opportunity to get there. I loved it. Like every single moment till the last day. Awesome.
Hey Bash, I just want to, I just want to inject one more thing. I think part of that dream was to marry an Arizona Cardinals cheerleader and propose to her in your flight suit on the football field during a football game on national TV. Is that right?
That's a good plan.
All of that
but
happened.
Yeah, I think all that happened. But no, I think once you achieve that goal and you're like living it, you're loving it, like, well, we all just said it too. You can't do that forever. So what do you do? What do you go transition? What do you love? What can you bring? And I tried to do a lot of soul searching on what the military gave me or experiences that I had that I can transfer. And in there, I was like, you know, trying to figure this out. I had a lot of good mentors who helped me kind of navigate some paths. And hey, if you don't know what it is yet, just de-risk your life by going to get, you know, the best degree you can to make yourself the most competitive on the outside. Because alluding to what Paco was saying, it is true. It's a very cool story. It's something to talk about. It makes it interesting, but more, you got to figure in the compelling side of why should somebody hire you. So what better way to do that than to just use the benefits that the Air Force has and GI Bill and cash in on yourself, invest in yourself, so that you can arm yourself with whatever knowledge that it is, either finding out what you want to do or learning a skill. But I think that's kind of mentors of mine that said, hey, you should go look into this, and then maybe that'll help you figure that out. So that's kind of why I did it, because I knew that, alluding also to Paco's comment about earnings potential, it's like, hey, if you're going to rip the Band-Aid off, do it fast and make up that lost time, because even with a 10-year pilot commitment, you're still relatively young on the outside. So did that, and kind of just the soul searching side that I did, I would say the people and the impact that we had, and it's flying fighter jets, right? So obviously the people that you meet in the military, it's like people, we just had one of our
Dawn Patrol reunions here in Manhattan, our first, you know, my first combat like deployment. We all came out here and hung out, and it's phenomenal, and it's so much fun. And I wanted to try to find an either the camaraderie side, which, you know, a lot of times you don't have control over, but the hard charging, tip of the spear, the people who are just like cream of the crop people. If you surround yourself with those people, they'll kind of lift you to whatever level you want to go to. So that's kind of one of the things I searched for. And then the other would be like impact, meaning like strategic impact, because, you know, you can't take fighter jets with you. But I remember one combat mission of mine where we did something, immediately landed, went to the chow hall with our sunglasses on our heads, right? Head, who said head? And then basically just see whatever you did on the TV screen on CNN, like headline news when ISIS was kicking off. And that was the one moment for me where I was like, holy cow, like, we're just blocking and tackling. We're doing the stuff that I learned in the B course. And you do that, and you don't really realize on the tactical level that you're operating at, how you can have significant strategic impact at a much higher level, like dime, instrument of power, military. And I was kind of blown away by that. So that was the one thought outside of just the people that, like, that's what I want. And I kind of saw a similarity there after, you know, Duke, talking to mentors, figuring out what was out there of, can I move that impact, not in the military sense, but, you know, I saw that similarity in the economic sense. So going into a place like either banking or consulting at like the kind of the more sought after roles that are super competitive to get into, and there's a really strict pipeline. You go to X undergrad, then to X business school, and if you don't go there, you're probably not going to get considered, because it's pretty true. And I was like, those guys and gals that do that, they have the same kind of impact, just at the highest levels of business that impact the economy and the stuff that you do, that you're in the trenches, even when you're young, you pick your head up, and then you see something on the Wall Street Journal and you're like, wow, that's cool. So that's kind of why I kind of made the decision to jump. And I think it's a good decision, whether it's banking or consulting, or just like set yourself up for finding what that drive is and what you felt that you loved about the military, right? And there is something out there, and educate yourself, use the GI Bill skill bridge. There's tons of resources that the military gives you, or DOD in general, and then just go after it. And I would just say, go for the best of the best, because if you don't make it there, or you that's not what you want, you're going to land pretty dang close to being successful. So that's kind of, I would say the other things is the skills that you learn. I think Paco nailed a lot of them. I think the academy, and just luckily I was a flyer, that's all I wanted to do my whole life. But being able to handle stress outside of like whatever capacity that you thought that you could operate at, the Air Force Academy, and, you know, operating in an operational fighter squadron, trying to solve tasks nonstop, tons of data coming at you at one time, being able to process it with, you know, three other wingmen, or however many other four ships or other assets in the air that are all communicating at once. It's just the ability to, like, don't get stressed, just process, de-risk whatever situation, don't get paralyzed by it, and move on. And those skills, I would say, as a whole, kind of, you can immediately start applying that to, you know, the first day on the job. You have no idea what you're doing. No one's there to help you out. There is no, like, hand-holding. There is no teaching. You just do. So you're like, okay, no one's here to hold my hand. Let's just go. And it's the problem solving, it's the risk, and how do you analyze all that at once. So yeah, happy to unpack a lot of that. And there's a lot, like, kind of one thing that we alluded at the start of the conversation is, you know, why not airlines? And I just, flying five jets, I didn't think, you know, point to point flying and like having that impact wasn't going to be there. And then there's a lot of other things that we could unpack of why not that route. That's usually the typical easier path, because it's a great living, like being at home a significant amount of time. That has some, there's a lot of pluses and a lot of minuses, but I just chose impact and more mental stimulation than anything else.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, and you referenced SkillBridge, which I think SkillBridge is really cool, which I didn't even know SkillBridge exists until I was already in the process of separating from active duty. But for those who don't know what SkillBridge is, and everybody here weigh in if I say something incorrect, it's roughly, I think it's 6 months, where you can actually work with a company for 6 months while you are still getting paid by the active duty to learn a new career set or learn a job or anything like that. So if you're like Bash, maybe if this is the way it worked out, you go to Duke, you have your degree, you end up getting a contact with a company, and then you skill bridge for 6 months, figuring out your life, and then you're not really falling without a chute once you are fully separated. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that kind of alludes to the point that I said earlier about de-risking yourself for another company to hire you. Is you got a cool story. They know you can bring a leadership. They know you can handle the stress. They know you can figure it out. It's just you got to get something to, because you can just talk about either an interest that you had and put it on your resume or actually learn a tangible skill. I chose that route. I luckily met some great people at Plexus Capital, lower middle market private equity firm, to learn more of the investing side of the world and kind of prep myself knowing that I wanted to go work at a bulge bracket investment bank. And there's, rather than just not doing any work and trying to just hope for the best, you plan way out in advance if you have time, right? That's the way to do it. But you put yourself in those situations and you learn, and then, you know, it's something you can talk about, like, hey, I'm interested in this. And rather than just every other veteran that you talk to that may say, oh yeah, I'm here, I did XYZ and I'm really interested, you put a little bit more punch behind that when you say, you know, I did a skill bridge, which is a phenomenal resource that we have. It de-risks the company that would hire you for that skill bridge. There's an opportunity to work there as well, right? Like, that's the whole point of it. And you can learn tangible skills and then, you know, set yourself up for success. So it's kind of a no-brainer if you're trying to figure yourself out, because if Congress said it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I talk to a lot of younger military people, which I think it's kind of unfortunate. And I know I was probably one of the dudes who did this, but like the next generation of like military members and fighter pilots specifically, they are aggressively jaded. You know, they're like just pinned on captain. And like, I met a guy, he was a FAPE, just finished PIT, and he was getting his ATP, restricted ATP, when I was getting mine years back. And he's like, oh yeah, you know, just get ready for when I get out. And I'm like, you got like 9.5 years left. Like, but hey, I guess, you know, plan as long as you can. But I think it's unfortunate because it is a great job. And I think everybody here wouldn't trade their military experiences for anything. But also the flip side is having a plan, preparing for when you're going to separate and do something. And, you know, it's funny you talk about skill bridge. I envision having just like gotten into the guard. It's like rushing the guard. You know, what does the guard want you to do? Come on out, bring a bottle, hang out with the bros. There's going to be, you know, the bro check. But that's what it is. You show up and they're like, hey, is this person a good fit? Are they a good dude? Are they going to work well with us? And that gives them a 6-month trial run that they, like you said, it de-risks them in that way. Paco, one of the things when you got at your current job, and all the other things you've got going on with the podcast, which I listened to how the Pentagon buys things, and very interesting, way over my nugget, but that's all right. But what would you say stress levels, and we'll kind of run through everybody's stress levels compared to flying, instructing, and airplanes and bad weather and all that stuff compared to life now? Like, how do you feel? Like, is the stress the same? Is it non-existent? What do you think?
Oh, well, I think I might be an outlier. And I say that for two reasons. Number one, I have more than one job. I have like 3 jobs right now. So I don't know about you guys, but there's like 30 hours in my day, and I don't sleep. And so that's the magic, by the way, of how I'm able to kind of run around and do things.
That's when you're delirious. You get 4 more hours.
That's right. So six. I definitely have some stress, and it's completely like self-induced, but it's positive stress. It's not negative stress. I enjoy it. And so, you know, it's like being in a fighter squadron and you know, at the end of the week, you're like, man, I'm kind of tired. And if you actually, you know, mapped it out, like, dude, I worked 70 hours this week. Didn't feel like it because I was having a good time. I was around people I enjoy. I was doing things I love. Like, you know, the time flies and you're having fun. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing right now. But I'd say that the transition is probably like it's the great unknown. And I started putting a few things on my LinkedIn, post, whatever they're called, to be like, hey, here's some nuggets that pick up along the way as I went through the transition. And it's like instructing, like the longer you've been between like your last flight, like you start losing relevancy. And so as these things were fresh in my mind, I wanted to just kind of capture them and put them out there for other people. And I also was, I felt like I was having some of the very repetitive conversations about people that were looking to get out in a couple of years. Like, what should I be thinking about? What should I be doing? And, you know, Shaka, you and I talked for quite a bit about transition stuff, and I'm happy to have a conversation, you know, with anyone. And I've had plenty of them, but some of the things that were kind of just the low hanging fruit of, you know, hey, make sure you do this, make sure you do that. Turns out the checklist for retiring out of the military is non-existent to terrible, but it's crazy. It was a running joke.
The complexity is really high.
Yeah, the complexity is, it's like you can just walk into a recruiting office and have a uniform on by the end of the week, but to take that uniform off, for the love of God, can someone fix that process? I was going through this with two other people at the same time, a sitting squadron commander, one of my best friends, and a sitting group commander. And we had this, and there was 2 other people. So we had 5 people on this email chain for like 10 months. And it was like reply all, oh, it turns out like this is wrong. You actually have to go to this building and this time. Oh, by the way, they've turned their phone off because they don't want to answer the phone anymore. Even though when you walk in, this is like customer service is our mission. I'm like, well, no, it's not. You know, so you have to deal with like, it's 1,000 things. And some of those you have to get your ducks in a row, like early, like, you know, for instance, if you're going to get out, everyone's going to get out at some point. Chances are, if you flew fighters, like you have something you're going to claim with the VA. Well, then, oh, you better have like locked down like life insurance before you file a VA claim, because when you fill out your life insurance paperwork, it's going to ask you, have you filed a claim for disability? And you go, well, that's considered a claim for disability. So like little things like that, you're like, oh, I got to start. And if you get a policy at 39 versus 41, like the rates are way different because, you know, 40 is a magic number on a piece of paper, right? So like those types of things, you start kind of like, oh, I really have to plan this out. But the other part of it is if you're more deliberate in your process of getting out, and making that transition and actually come up with a plan. Here's what I got to do, you know, month by month, and just pick something small and do it. Number one, it won't feel like, you know, you climb a mountain like one step at a time, and you won't just get caught in an avalanche of all the things that you have to do at the end. But secondly, it really sets you up for success and of what you want to do. And you kind of created that alignment of like, what do I want to do? Who do I want to go work with to do this thing that I want to do? And where you see a lot of people that retire or transition or get out, and they go through, and I can't remember the number, but it's like 80% of people don't stay at their first job for more than 12 months after they separate. And I know that that's kind of a mix of different career fields and you know, enlisted, officer, young, old. So, but I personally know people that, I don't know, at least a half dozen people I personally know that went through four jobs in their first year, just bouncing around to different, like ah, I didn't like those people. Ah, I didn't like that team. Ah, I didn't like that location. Like, man, you've really just dialed up your own stress for you and your family. I'm not saying you can predict the future, but you can do that risk reduction that Bash talked about of just, dude, do your homework, man, like study for the test.
Yeah. Hey, Paco, let me add a little bit to that. So going back to kind of the Vader, where Vader started with that question, as far as like stress level at the new job, you know, that was something that I found in, you know, again, I had the luxury. I wasn't coming directly out of it. I wasn't retiring out of an operational job. So for those that are kind of like, you know, leaving command of a squadron and then you're trying to retire, like that's going to be tough. But if you have the time and the ability to kind of do your due diligence, you're going to kind of get a sense of the character of the kind of an organization that you're going to go to. And that's really important. You know, there's obviously hey, what's the industry that I want to work in? What's the size of an organization that I want to be at? But then really the one that's really kind of hard to scratch at, unless you just do the work to talk to lots of people, is, you know, what's the character of that organization going to be like? So a quick example, I talked to a buddy, and I won't name the company, but one of the big defense primes that buddy of mine had been there for about a year. He had left right out of command, and we had a bunch of great conversations, but he was like, it's been a really hard year. It's been a stressful year. And the idea, I think you mentioned it, Eric, like no one's going to tell you, like, you know, you show up as a post command 05 or, you know, anywhere, you know, you're probably making, they're paying you decent money and they're not going to hold you. Like there's an expectation that most companies aren't going to hold your hand and just tell you what to do. But what I would say, what I could sense from him, so I could sense that he was stressed and there was an element of frustration. And in some of these huge companies, like that's going to be very dependent, you know, like it's not going to be broad across the entire company. It might be specifically in that office working on that project or that thing. You know, one of the senses I got with Anduril, and I'll just, you know, quick story there. Like, you know, I mean, my first day on the job, Palmer Luckey, the co-founder of Anduril, like he spent like 3 hours with a group of 20 of us just talking, shooting the breeze and like really kind of caring about us. And this is a company that's grown significantly. And my experience there in a very short period of time was that they actually like, they really do want you to succeed and they are pouring, they're investing time. So like my couple months that I've been there have actually been spectacular. And I was just out in Costa Mesa this past week and I live in DC. So decent amount of travel, but you know, and I was working 12 or 13 hour days. Like it was long days, but like, it was not stressful because I was like getting back, talking to engineers who are trying to solve hard problems for defense. And I'm helping them understand my perspective. And then I'm down and, you know, driving down to San Diego to talk to other companies that we might be partnering with on. I mean, like just super cool stuff. So from a stress perspective, like, yeah, those, like I'm a little bit outside of my comfort zone, some of those things, but it's cool and it's exciting. And that's, you can only kind of get that sense if you do your due diligence, and it takes a long time to have those conversations with people as you're working on your transition. And not everyone has that time. And that's where, you know, SkillBridge is one of those great opportunities. If you need that kind of accelerated transition to almost, you know, date the company before you're ready to go in and actually sign up to work with them. So I don't know, just a couple thoughts on that. And Apaka, I'm sure you've had similar experiences at Shield as well too.
Yeah, there's a really fantastic quote from Steve Jobs. He was trying to hire this guy from Pepsi and the guy didn't want to leave. And finally he goes, hey, what's going on here? Do you want to sell sugar water or you want to change the world? And he's like, okay.
That's a good way to put it. So Bash, I imagine, which obviously never having worked in your profession currently, Is it pretty stressful, would you say, for your current job? And do you find yourself more stressed than you were previously, or do you feel like it's stress, but it's just different?
Stress is so different for everybody. And can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you.
Cool. I think stress is so different for everybody, so it's definitely a good and tough question to answer. I think it's not life and death. I think it is stressful, like the other guys have said, about going into a new place that is incredibly technical, and that is it's a skill set that takes a significant amount of time to learn. But I mean, it, just like you can't hop into a four-ship flight lead waiting marshalling with 24 airplanes waiting to push to cross fight some people approach, right? You got to start somewhere. You have that mindset, and it's stressful. We're helping make strategic decisions to either acquire other businesses, or what value can we bring to them and increase their performance overall. So shareholder, the job is always last. I was finishing a 38. You're grinding, but you're learning and you're building that set. So, the feeling that we all had when you first get into your T6 or maybe a different plane, you have no idea what's going on. And that can do attitude, surround yourself with those people, and it de-risks that. And you'll figure it out. Like everyone in the military make a jump and be successful. You just have to prep yourself for it. You've got the keys to the castle to handle the stress, to figure things out. You got to jump in and realize, like, hey, I am new at something, but I'm going to learn it quick because I've had the experiences that I've had previously. So, yeah, I would say there's stress, but some people may say differently in the job.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've had a mild amount of experience with, but kind of what you guys alluded to a little bit is you're figuring it out. And one of the things that we all had the benefit of is when we're going through formal training, like, in the military, it is tested. I mean, they've been training pilots and WISOs and people for decades and decades and decades. And it may not be the most advanced way to train people. It may not be leveraging AR and VR and the technology that exists today. But what it is it's something that every 3 weeks, they are starting a new class of, 6 to 15 students, and they know how to train you. And what you do have is you actually do have a lot of handholding in the military. With your military training, there's very deliberate assistance, sometimes even teaching the test so you can focus on your flight that's coming up, because there's just so much to learn. So I think that is a difference between the two things, where sometimes, like at Anduril, you can kind of get that exposure, but there's not somebody who's like, you are the student, this is your instructor.
Right.
They are going to step you through over and over and over, and you're going to get academics on it. Then you're going to study it. Then you're going to get more academics on it. Then you're going to do a simulator, and then you're going to fly it. After you fly it a few times, you're going to be tested on it, and we're going to expect you to know it. Like, that's not anywhere else.
The only thing I will say to that, though, is that, so I agree 100%. You're right. There is not going to be, the military is very good at that. Something that Anduril did, and a lot of, I think, good organizations will do, though, like, we had a week-long onboarding session that was probably more productive. And basically you're more ready to jump off and be a part of that organization than I had ever seen in the military. And I kind of wanted to go back and be like, hey, we need to relook at our command indoc programs because it might take you a month. Took me a month to get, swipe access to anything in the Pentagon. Even by the time I left, I didn't have all the accounts I needed. And it's like, a high performing organization, I think, is going to know, how to get quickly up to speed. And that's actually probably a good question to ask, when you're trying to figure out, is this the kind of organization I want to go to? Ask them about, hey, how do you onboard new people, and how do you train new people to come to become a part of the organization, to understand? You're right. It's not the same as far as a syllabus of teaching you how to fly form. But I would say that any top performing organization is going to want to have at least a little bit of that. Or if the answer is no, if that sounds gross to you and you don't want to go through a week of in-doc, there are plenty of organizations out there who don't do that, and they're just going to throw you in the, you know, so, but it's a part of that, that kind of figuring out where you're going to go.
Yeah. I will highlight, when I went through, I've lost track. I think I've had 5 job titles in the time that I've worked at Shield AI. That was, you know, it's a company that's growing and it's adjusting, and you know, it's a nascent market for applying autonomy and artificial intelligence to air vehicles. But, what I ended up landing on was in the product role. So I don't do business development, and that's kind of a wheelhouse for, I think, a lot of people who end up transitioning. I actually help build the product. So it's I love my job because it's a little bit of business development. So I get out on the road and get to see people I know and have had, you know, life experiences with in the Air Force and the other services, which is great. But then I also have to go talk to the engineering team and kind of coordinate, like, What is the work to be done? What is the timeline? What does the customer actually want? And then translating that into engineering speak. So I'm kind of like the Spanish to English translator, the guy from Office Space who talks to customers. I got people skills, damn it.
I put the specs from the engineers to the
That's
customers.
Right. That's right. So I do a little bit of that. but when I moved over to that job, in a tech company, a product manager or director of product, those are like positions, like they don't really exist outside of tech. So as I went into that job, I'm like, oh, that's great. I have no idea what I'm doing. But I mean, I can figure it out. And the question wasn't be, we'll figure it out. It's what do you need to be successful? I'm like, well, if there's a way that I could learn a few things, they're like, okay, we'll come up with some ideas and let us know. I'm like, okay, well, so by the end of the week, it's like, hey, here's some online courses. Hey, here's a business course at Wharton that's like on product management. I'm like, that would probably be useful. Like, okay, like here's a credit card. Go sign up for the course and go get smart on how to do your job. Like, okay, great. And so I was able to add, you know, awesome. I took a course from there, learn how the kind of the principles of product manager, so I can learn a little bit of the language and lingo, and then you apply it to the situation. And so it's just foundational, you know, academic, but super insightful to have that perspective and the support. Again, really, like, it's, we say, you know, do, don't say. So the fact that, like, we want you to be successful, like, no, we're putting our money where our mouth is. Like, here, go get smart and then come back and show us what you learned.
Yeah. And I think one thing I think, and Bash kind of alluded to this before or spoke deliberately to it, was the military gives you chances to do things like that, you know, with maybe your IDE or your professional military education isn't always the best, but whether they give you an opportunity, they pay for you to get an MBA or they can send you to, you know, DC, or you work in the Pentagon, you get perspectives that you wouldn't always get. So before we get going, I'm going to pass it around the room. So take the opportunity to kind of think of something. So you guys, all three of you, are standing on the opposite shore of the river, having already separated, looking back at yourself and the rest of the military members who haven't kind of traversed that. So I'll ask you in a second is kind of, what is your perspective now, having separated, having or retired, having started a new career, and what would be something you would provide to someone who's looking to do that? So I'll kind of provide some input while you guys are thinking about that. This episode was to try to provide a broader perspective and understanding for those who are looking for this episode's called On the Outside, because that's kind of what we're doing here, is looking from the outside in. So obviously the airlines are always an option for people. And I don't think there's anything bad about it. One of the things that Shaka and I talked about before we started recording was, I know multiple people who've been on this podcast previously are airline guys, and in the part time, in their spare time, are spending time in innovation, spending time doing things that they're passionate about. So it doesn't mean this episode is not to stop people from going to the airlines. It's to help people who are most likely type A, who are used to mentally challenging undertakings and still getting more and more of that as they move on. So Paco, we're going to send it to you first. So what advice or what perspective can you send to those looking to do what you've done or something similar?
I'd say that, you know, if you go back and you think of a time in your career in the military where you were uncomfortable, where I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know how I'm going to figure this out, I don't know if I can do it, and you find a way, it all comes together in the end, and that, and over time, I think some people, you forget those times that you're, that period of uncomfortability where you're just like, there's too many unknowns, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my advice is, you know, think of that and just be comfortable with being uncomfortable. It is a very big world out there. There's so many things that you can do. And by challenging yourself to just stay uncomfortable and pushing yourself in different directions will give you that perspective to, you know, that shore on the other side is not as far away as you think it is. And the water is not as deep as you think it is.
I dig it. Bash, what do you got?
I would say, bet on yourself because you'll succeed no matter what. So like, don't be afraid of it. And I would say there's a line that needs to happen. Like if we join the military and we're pilots, or even if you just owe 4 years or whatever it may be, that's going to creep up really, really fast. And the advice would be, don't get out with your pants. 2 years left, 1 year left. Like try, and even if you know you want to go to the airlines or you know generally what you want to do, like keep pushing yourself for whatever that other passion would be. And I would say, you know, there are some risks in the airline. What if you get hurt? What if, you know, innovation's happening? What if pilots go away? Like it's a risk. You're betting on that for 30 years, right? Like that's significant. So like there's a lot of like, think about risk, but always have another option. Always be pushing yourself for, like, even if the guy that you were talking about, Vader, that's like, yeah, I'm young, I'm going to the airlines. A lot can happen in that time. Just keep seeking something else and keep finding what other thing is out there that you would be interested in. And that'll help keep you like mentally in the fire drill. And then it can maybe force you to go take advantage of some of the programs, push yourself to go do school, to de-risk that decision. And then instead of just being like, oh my gosh, I'm a year out, what do I do? It's, I mean, I got this option. I don't know if I want to do this, but I did X, Y, and Z in the past. I'm set up for that. It's the optionality to be able to do whatever you want rather than wait, like, don't wait, reach out. Everyone said networking. That is probably the most important thing I've learned in my life so far, not even in the military, but like 4 years prior to me getting out now, it just gets even more and more crazy that the people you know are going to make moves for you, and just reach out and talk to people. And if you think you have an idea, reach out to Shaka and ask him, like, what made you do this? Like, just have these conversations. The network will build, an idea will tip off, it'll force you to go do something else, and just jump in, because it's gonna happen soon.
Yeah, I dig it. Shaka, last one. What do you got?
Cool. Agree with everything both Paco and Bash said. What I would say, you know, I heard this on a podcast talking about, you know, throughout your career, you've got times where your head's down, where you're really focused on the now and what you're doing. And we need fighter pilots who are doing that, right? We need people who are passionate and about the mission and they're in there. But then there's times when you're kind of heads up and you're looking out on the horizon and you're growing, you know, whether that be you're growing for the purpose of just being a better leader at some point in the military, or you're growing in the purpose of what might be out there later. So, you know, I think throughout my career, if I look back to maybe the first 5 to 10 years of my career, I actually was pretty terrible about that heads out time. I was very heads down focused. And I don't think if I'd have been forced to pivot, if I'd have been, you know, if something would have happened where I would have gotten out of the 10 year mark, I would have been a little bit, you know, maybe not really sure what else was out there. Right. So I think that's one thing. So then, you know, what I would say is that, you know, throughout each of those kind of heads up in those kinds of phases in your life, whether it's continuous or whether it's episodic, the things I would consider, I'm going to land with what Bash said with networking, because I do think that's the number one thing. It's not a dirty word like I thought it was for like the first 15 years of my Navy career. The two other things I'll throw out, and then but I do want to land on networking, education, right? You know, that's also not a dirty word, and it comes in both formal and informal. So, you know, I remember there was a time of, you know, being a young JO, just being jaded and thinking education was a terrible, you know, not just really concerned about educating myself. So informal, like I listen to a ton of podcasts and I go through ebbs and flows. Like sometimes they're very business oriented podcasts. Sometimes they are military and strategy and news, you know, whatever that is. But I think that's good. And books as well, whether you're reading or listening to them. And if you can pick up a degree or, you know, a fellowship or something like that, those are all good things. So look for those opportunities. I would say consider a side gig at some point if you're interested. So, you know, two of the four of us have podcasts that they do as essentially side gigs to something. And I don't know what your main gigs and what your side gigs. And Bash, I don't know you well enough to know if you have a side gig. But I will say I started buying real estate like in 2011, 2012. A lot of people do real estate as a side gig. I have three short-term rentals right now. It's Big Shaka Properties is my kind of property. I manage them remotely. And they're pretty lucrative. You know, they're at different locations. I get to scratch the itch of a lot of things that I love. Like I lead small teams of operators because I manage these properties remotely. I do all the customer engagement. I do the dynamic pricing. There's a lot of cool, you know, it's actually a fairly active thing, but it's a side gig. It's pretty lucrative and I really enjoy it. So consider that, you know, and then the last one just being networking. So as I educate myself about real estate and how to be a better short-term real estate investor, one of the podcasts I listen to there, The Short-Term Shop, they always say, hey, your network is your net worth. And I don't know if I entirely agree with that, but it's not too far off, right? Like, and the reason why I think it's, you know, what I focused on, a wide intentional and continuous network. So being intentional about building relationships, being intentional about reaching out to people. It's not about what can you do for me. If you approach it with an attitude of more of like, hey, this is a person I want to be connected with, and I hope that I can help them out sometime. You know, it's not transactional, it's relationship building, all of those things. You know, people that have an attitude of abundancy versus scarcity with their network, I think tend to be pretty well, i.e. it's not some piece of the pie that I'm trying to hold on to, and I'm just waiting for the right person to come along so I can offer up some favor so they can then in return give me something back. Like that's, I think I had that perception about networking for a long time. Whereas now, like I've got people in all sorts of different industries that I was able to call up, build relationships with, and really helped me as I transitioned. I was really glad that I spent several years intentionally trying to build out my network. That was probably the number one thing that helped me. So
awesome. That's it. Well, I appreciate everyone's input. And for all those young military members listening, we all enjoyed our time in the military because we were present. We enjoyed the people around us. We enjoyed the experiences. So focus on the future. Understand that there will be life after the military, but enjoy the heck out of the military while you're in it, because it is an awesome experience. Even when you go to the Garden Reserve, it's going to be similar, but it's not the same. And sometimes those struggles that you're going to experience, those bad deals in the military, end up being experiences that you look back on fondly. So I'll put people's contact info in the show notes if they're cool with it. So if you do want to reach out to one of these guys, if you do want to kind of increase your network, then you can reach out and gain some knowledge about kind of things out there beyond that. For podcast stuff, thank you everybody for donations. Donations are always open. Thank you to our sponsors. And again, 5 stars, give us a rating and check out the Merge podcast, because it's pretty sweet. And it's way smarter than my podcast, that's for certain. But guys, thanks for joining me on the podcast, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Peter.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.